Blog Talk Radio.
And the collective wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck, and I am the host of this show. Joining me tonight is Jerry Lee Miller, who was arrested last week in Washington, D.C., as he protested a new pipeline carrying oil sands fuel from Canada to the USA. The arrests began 8/19, and so far, I believe about 500 people have been arrested. Jerry Lee is an anti-fracking activist here in Lancaster, PA, and is a retired Brethren minister. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Jerry Lee Miller. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, Kate. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. How are you?
Oh, yeah, I'm wonderful, too. It's good to be with you again and to
be with
your listeners.
Yeah, it was really wonderful. It's really wonderful to have you back.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm eager to talk to you. Actually, there's been 600 people now that have done the civil disobedience in front of the White House to give President Obama the message to say no to this pipeline. And, you know, it seems to be building. Go ahead.
Was I right to say 500 have been arrested, or is that...
It's 600. No,
oh,
600.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, then. So tell us about this pipeline, and it's just not one pipeline, as we were discussing this morning. It sounds like there's several in the works, but I guess we have to go with one pipeline at a time.
Yeah, well, there's already a Keystone One pipeline that is pumping this dirty tar sands oil down from Alberta and into the United States, but the proposed pipeline is called the Keystone XL, which I think XL probably means extra large, and it would double the amount of dirty tar soil tar sands oil that is coming down. It's just really nasty stuff. In the production alone, the levels of carbon dioxide emissions are three times higher than those of conventional oil.
What is this oil? I mean, what makes it dirty versus clean? I mean, you know, what we're really talking about, what we would really, I think, the earth is clean for us is to get off the dependency of any oil. But what about this dirty oil? What is that about?
Yeah, well, it's coming from the tar sands up in Alberta, and it's connected. And, you know, I don't really understand all the geology of it myself,
mm-hmm.
but I know that in order to extract it, it's extremely energy intensive. It uses roughly 400 million gallons of water a day, just to extract this, and it's like, well, it's shale, you know, like the natural gas in the Marcellus shale region. Well, it's in the shale. We're at the point in our energy extraction history, our very brief history, if you compare it to how long humans have been here. But we're at that point where we're just really going after the dirty, nastiest stuff that's hard to get, that's expensive to get and that causes the most the most damage to the environment and the most health producing problems. Now, yesterday in Washington, at the demonstrations, the very prominent climate scientist, Dr. James Hansen, he's considered the foremost climate scientist in the country. He's with NASA, and he put himself on the line and was arrested in an act of civil disobedience simply to emphasize that our president has to hear this and has to say no to allowing this to come through. But actually, it was probably Dr. Hansen's words that I read a few weeks ago that tipped the scale towards my wanting to participate in this. What he said was that if this dirty oil, this with all that it takes to extract it, to pump it, and then to refine it, and the refining will be done down in Texas and Louisiana, and you know, all of that, you know, then once it's burned, you know, and put into the atmosphere, that he said basically, in his opinion, it's game over for the climate change, that we can't get it back, that the planet will have gone to a tipping point, and you know, this planet weird that we're starting to experience will just get weirder and weirder. He didn't say the planet weird, but he did say that the game would be over.
That's
and that
very,
got my
very,
attention.
Yeah, that's oh my gosh, you know, and it's coming from, as you say, a prominent scientist who is well revered for his work, and he doesn't just say things frivolously, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, you have the Obama administration, the State Department, or what was that department today or yesterday that said that this pipeline would be perfectly safe for the environment? Why would they be working and saying things counter to this prominent scientist who has done years and years of work in this area? I just, you know, obviously we know why, because of the money and the greed and the dependence on oil. But nobody is, of course, addressing how we can get off the grid, you know, how we can do that. And this morning when we were talking, you went into a very interesting, introspective discourse on how we need to look into our own dependence and how we can break our own dependence, even though...
Right.
So somebody like you, you know, you do the right thing most of the time, but when you slip, as we all addicts do, you are conscious enough to know that you have slipped, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, yeah, we are addicted to oil, and you know, the best alternative, my friend Kip Adams says, is conservation. You know, that there are ways to cut back enormously. But, you know, it just has occurred to me in looking at myself that what I'm addicted to is the lifestyle, and I think that's the case for all of us. This morning I was going to ride my bike down to the Central Market in Lancaster, which is about a 20-minute ride for me, and I was going to meet my friend Paul, and we were doing something that was very important to us, and talking to an individual about some plans for September 11th, and then my friend Paul, and our mutual friend Paul, called about 7:30, and he said, "I really need to change that because I have other things to do. Can you meet me at 8? Well,
yeah,
I could meet him at 8, but I would have to take my car to do that. So I thought, well, this is so important, I'm going to take my car. But, you know, my aha and all that was, you know, why am I so important that I have to take my car? I could have just as easily said to him, okay, well, you know, we'll just have to reschedule this. But I think I and everyone else in our society are addicted to doing so many things within a shorter period of time than what's sustainable. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not that important that I have to be all over the place. I just think I am a lot of the time. So that was kind of an aha that I could have easily either said, well, Paul, I'll ride my bike if you're still there. We'll do this. Or I could have said, well, let's just reschedule. But
yes, yes.
So anyhow, that's my example for today.
Yeah, I think that's something that we can all contemplate and use to our own situations, you know. Recently it came, I just wanted to tell you this, I forgot to tell you this before, that it came to my attention. I was walking my dog Ulysses downtown, and I ran into this sweet, wonderful woman whom said that her dog dropped over dead at 8. Well, the reason we talked about the dog dying is because Ulysses almost died last winter. As a lot of the internet, my internet friends know, the thing is, she said that her dog dropped over dead at 8 years of age. Really, she couldn't understand why. She fed the dog organic food. She did a number of different things that were very healthy for the dog. And when he died, she had to do some introspection as to why he had died of this rare form of cancer. And it turned out something she admitted, that she treats her lawn with Roundup. And Roundup is it's probably a watered down form of Agent Orange. And it occurred to me, and it has always occurred to me, but this was my aha, and for that situation, that what would happen if every American, and maybe I don't think they do this widespread treatment of lawns in other countries like Europe or Germany or England, but maybe they do, I just don't know. But what would happen if everybody just stopped treating their lawn? Just stopped, everybody just stopped treating their lawn. That would be, because it is war on the dandelion. It's a very violent thing to do. And,
well, you know, dandelions are edible. Dandelion greens are edible. We could just turn our lawns into places where we grow food. There's no reason. The lawn, you know, is a symbol of, you know, in earlier times that, hey, I don't need to grow food. I can just put my property in grass, you know, because I'm so wealthy. That's what it is. It's a conspicuous symbol of wealth, you know. And then now you know, it's just why do you need your grass to be green? But can I get back to the tar sands and the pipeline in Alberta?
Because
people do not know about this. I confess, I didn't really know a whole lot about it until the last month. This is nasty, nasty stuff. You know, Josh Fox did such a great job of exposing the in Gasland, the Marcellus Shale and the fracking.
Yes.
And he has a great, it's only a 10-minute video on the tar sands that he did for tarsandsaction.org, who's promoting the demonstrations. And I would encourage anybody to go to tarsandsaction.org and read up on this and see his video. But in Alberta, Canada, the region where the tar sands extracted, with all the water, I said they at the rate they're going, they're using roughly 400 million gallons of water a day, and then 90% of this polluted water is dumped into large man-made pools that they call tailing ponds after it's used. Tail, like the tail of your dog, okay? Tail of Ulysses. Okay, and then these ponds are home to toxic sludge, substances like cyanide and ammonia that works its way into neighboring water supplies.
Yes.
And then in Alberta, it's a home to a number of indigenous or First Nation peoples on their lands, and their way of living is being attacked. You know, hunting and fishing grounds are being polluted. Wildlife is leaving. And listen to this. You know, you always hear about what happens downstream. Downstream from these tailing ponds, the indigenous communities have seen spikes in their rates of cancers, rare cancers, kidney failure, lupus, and hyperthyroidism. And there's one village. Its name is Fort Chipewyan. Has 1,200 residents. Did have 1,200. 100 of the town's 1,200 residents have died from cancer. So one out of twelve. One out of 12.
Wow.
Yeah.
This thing was coming up. I remember. This is located. You say mostly in Alberta.
And yeah, that's where it is.
Jobs. Lots of new jobs. Supposed new jobs are taking place there, and something that Naomi Klein and Bill McGibbon has talked about extensively, and they called for these acts of civil disobedience because they figured that was the only way to get President Obama's attention, because
we have to get him his attention. And
as you said, it's his call, right?
Yeah.
And what do you think he'll do?
I don't know what he'll do. I know it's his call. He doesn't have to confer with Congress. It requires a presidential stamp of approval to cross our international border. You know, that's an international border between Canada and the United States. You just can't send a pipeline across. You have to have the president's approval. He doesn't have to, worry about Congress. He can call it on his own. And so that's why we're in front of the White House.
Yes.
Is there to say, this is your call, President Obama. When you were elected, this is what you said. You said the planet would heal. You said the levels of the sea would discontinue rising. Just glowing, beautiful words. So, let's see you stand up and back up those words. We're sitting down on your sidewalk, so you'll stand up. That's what we're doing.
Yes. And so far, he's very quiet on the subject, I gather.
He hasn't said a word. No, he's let the State Department issue an environmental impact study, as you referred to earlier, and that came out at the end of last week, in which they said, this isn't going to be an environmental problem. The pipeline will be fine. But the point of fact is that the current smaller pipeline has had an average of a spill a month, including Kalamazoo River in Michigan had a major spill last summer, where 1 million gallons of tar sands oil poured into the river there.
So that was tar sands oil particular disaster. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Now, is Texas a little upset about this because it's coming into their state, this tar sand oil?
Yeah, I think the only people that are upset are the people who are aware that the environmental damage is so destructive. They're upset. I doubt if Governor Perry is upset. He probably thinks that this is, there are some jobs. Texas is the... Houston is called the Petro Metro, and there's an area in Houston, it's called Manchester. I imagine the poor people who live there and the people of color that live there, who really don't have any power, but who are going to have their neighborhoods further polluted. There's every chemical company and refinery and pollutant you can imagine already in that neighborhood, and that's where this is going to end up, to be refined. Last Wednesday when we did our civil disobedience, part of our group was a young man from Houston, and he and his father had started an environmental justice organization. And there were quite a few people from the Gulf Coast that had joined us on that particular day, people from Texas and Louisiana.
You met a lot of people then. That must have been pretty exciting to talk to them and get their point of view.
It was very inspirational to have that opportunity.
Yes, and people were bonding, and so what was it like going to jail? How were you treated?
Treated very well. I should probably explain what we were arrested for.
Yes,
we positioned ourselves right on the sidewalk in front of the White House with the White House gate, you know, at our backs. There's 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And we had a practice formation that we practiced at training the night before. So we had a pretty good idea how we were going to, some of us were standing, most of us were sitting. And we stopped moving. That was a violation because this is called the postcard area. It's where people from all over the world come and they stand right there and they say, take my picture with the White House behind me. So a few years ago, they established a regulation that said, you know, you can walk around, you can say stop the pipeline on the sidewalk all you want, but as soon as you stop and you indicate that you're not going to move, then that's a violation. So it's actually a perfect place to do civil disobedience because of that regulation. So
perfect.
Yeah, and once you do that, then the police give you an officer with a bullhorn comes out, stands in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue, and he says, this is officer so-and-so, you are now in violation of regulation da-da-da-da, whatever it is. If you don't move, you will be arrested. This is your first warning. And so then he walked off for a few minutes, comes back. After the third warning, then they fence in the area. So it's like fences that look like bicycle racks. And once that happens, then you're under arrest. You can't get up. And so then two officers come for, you know, one at a time. And they always have been starting with the women. So you stand up if you're sitting down, put your hands behind your back, and they have some, I think they're called zip ties that they use to bind you. Does a pretty good job. And then they escort you across the street. This is my experience, and it's been the experience of just about everybody else. There are several police vehicles inside this fenced-in area. A couple of officers on horses outside, and they set up a canopy, like right at the edge of the street across the way there where Lafayette Park is, and that's where they do the initial processing. They take your picture there. They frisk you and search you pretty thoroughly. You go to a table and they get your social security number and your photo ID. And of course, somebody has to reach in your pocket and get that for you because your hands are bound. And then you were asked, do you want to post and release? And what that means is that once you get to the station, you can post a $100 fine without admitting any kind of guilt, and then you will be released. So I said, yes, that was the goal of our demonstration. We weren't there to test the system. You know, the police aren't our enemies. They're just workers who are doing their job. You know, we just wanted to get the work. We didn't want to be the story or the issue. The issue is our message.
Yeah.
So then I got on I was put on a paddy wagon, sat there for 15, 20 minutes until it was filled and ready to go, and then they took us a 15-minute ride, sat in it for another 15, 20 minutes, and then got out and then was processed, took another 15, 20 minutes, and then my handcuffs were cut off, and I paid my $100 fine. The charge was failure to obey a lawfully given order, and it's in the same category as like walking your dog unleashed in D.C. I mean, it's not even a misdemeanor in the way they evaluate it. It's more like on the level of a parking ticket. So the fact that you're sitting in front of the White House and there's 50 or 60 or 70 of you like there were today, they've got to get you out of there, you know, Homeland Security and all the concerns. So, it is serious business to get you handcuffed and to transport you away from the White House. But as far as the charge is concerned, it's not that serious a charge.
Now, there were some serious questions about the leader of the movement. I don't want to say that he's the leader, but he is one of the mastermind behind it is Bill McKibben, who was jailed for 3 days, and that came up on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now, because as you just said, you know, you were jailed for a brief amount of time. He was mm-hmm. jailed for 3 days, and they wanted him to, which I feel must have been come down from the Obama administration.
I should say
that there was questions as to whether it did or not.
Who knows? What I heard was that, you know, the police, and actually the jurisdiction wasn't the Metro Police, but it was the Park Police. You know, has jurisdiction over the White House property there, not the Secret Service, but you know, in front of the fence there. They don't. I asked one of the officers. I said, "Well, you must have a lot of demonstrators like that." And she said, "It's probably been 6 or 8 months." So this isn't. While it's part of their training and experience, it's not an everyday experience. And certainly they've never had a situation where day after day after day after day, you know, for 2 whole weeks, the demonstration is repeated. So that's kind of new to them. And what I heard, and who knows what the truth is, what I heard was they were under the impression that the same group that went the first day, we're just going to keep coming back day after day. So if we hold them here for a couple of days, then it's all over, and we don't have to deal with this, which wasn't the truth.
Yes, yes. I don't know if I guess Naomi Klein might have also been the author of Shock Doctrine, may have also been jailed, and I think she has a new book about the environment. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I don't know. But she was one of the, in the initial invitation to come do this, she was one of the signers of the invitation. And also one who got my attention was Wendell Berry, who I have a lot of respect for. He's a farmer from Kentucky and a great author and poet.
Oh, I love him. He's wonderful.
Yeah,
Did you meet him? No, he wasn't
there. Bill McKibben was there. Bill McKibben is there every day.
Yes.
Except when he was in jail.
Did you get a chance to meet him?
Yeah, he was there at our training. He spoke, and then he spoke right before we got in formation to walk across the street. And then Kip Adams and I went back the following day to support the demonstrators on Thursday. In fact, there were two others from Lancaster County on Thursday that we knew. And so I heard Bill McKibben again, and he was really battling some health issues. I think he's been burning the candle at both ends. And when he was through talking to that group, he was right in front of me, and he turned and he started coughing as he was walking off. I reached up and patted him on the back. I mean, that was my connection to Bill McKibben. I didn't actually talk to him, but I patted him on the back as he was coughing.
Oh, that dear soul.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I have a Naomi Klein up here on Amazon. I'm just trying to see. Fences and Windows. That's an old one. That's an old book. Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Globalization Debate. I'm not sure if she is in the process of writing a book about the environment. That's my guess, because it's not up here. And the book that has really done well for her is called The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. And we've read that around here, and I certainly do appreciate her tremendous journalistic skill. And what a great writer she is! So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she was one of the the main. I wouldn't say organizers, but she put her name right up front as one of the inviters to this. But I want to give tarsandsaction.org a huge amount of credit. Their training was incredible. We were totally prepared for everything that happened on the day of our demonstration, and it's just so well organized. And people came. I would encourage people to go. There's photographs there of every day. There's great videos. A video of James Hansen, the science NASA scientist, and he's one of of many scientists who've come out saying how important it is to stop this. But he's just the most prominent that has spoken. So he's not the only scientist. I think it's pretty well uniform, those who have studied the science.
Yes, it's a great-looking website. Stop the Pipeline. And it's a good old-fashioned sit-in from, like, the good old days in the 1960s.
Right, and that's the good old days of 2011.
Yeah, I can't believe it, you know? That's so cool.
2011. So there still is time if anybody's listening and you feel that this is something that's important to make a statement, you can still participate. The time is short. You need to sign up now. Or on Saturday in Lafayette Park, directly across from the White House at noon, there is a huge rally. It's not a civil disobedience. It's simply a rally. There'll be speakers and a lot of the people who've already gone through and were arrested and so on will return. And it'll just be one great concluding rally. I plan to go back, and my hope is to organize several carloads from Lancaster County and to have 25 there. We're going to meet at 11:30 in Lafayette Park at the restrooms, and it's easy to find that. And hopefully we'll have a large banner that says Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, says Stop Keystone XL Pipeline. That's my goal. I'm working on it, and I'm about halfway there.
Well, that's terrific. According to this website, there are 595 arrests as of this moment.
Sounds about right. Uh-huh.
And Bill McKibben responds to Press Secretary Jay Carney's statements. Apparently, I believe because of the arrest of the scientists, Jake Carney, the press secretary to President Obama, was questioned by reporters on Air Force One. And the question was, is the president aware of the protests? And Mr. Carney says, I haven't talked to him about it. I don't believe that.
Yeah. But there, it has extended beyond Washington, D.C., because I was reading that there were 20 people with signs wherever President Obama was in Minnesota today. There were 20 people with signs about stopping the Keystone XL that greeted him there. So, you know, we're everywhere.
Yes, and it's a movement. It's a movement, and everybody was disappointed that so few people are. Apparently so few people were showing up there, but I think it's going to, you know, gain momentum, and people have to stop being afraid of losing their jobs and stuff like that. That's the thing. Mm-hmm.
It is a movement, Kate. You're absolutely right. It's a movement, and after I did it, I've been so energized and feel so empowered to continue taking. Like somebody said, you take the right step that you can take regardless of how you predict the outcome will be. That's irrelevant. And then when you take that step, then you take the next right step. You celebrate a little bit that you did it maybe, but you you find other people taking that next right step with you. That is what's so exciting to me.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and people willing to put their bodies on the line for this. And we're talking about the future of our planet.
Yeah.
For heaven's sake. So
I think that's why it's so empowering.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why wouldn't you be willing? Why wouldn't you be willing to take a stand for, you know, not for your grandchildren, great grandchildren, the next seven generations, and then how about the animals, and how about the trees and the plants and. You know, I kind of have a hunch that in the end, Mother Earth will be okay. but
yeah.
maybe the rest of us won't be, you know. And I'm one, you know, some people are just wondering about the coincidence of the fact that the within a couple of days after we started this demonstration, there was an earthquake that hit the East Coast, the 100-year earthquake that really shook Washington, D.C. It happened the day that I arrived. And then, you know, the storm of, I don't know, a decade or two since the East Coast has been really hit by such a serious storm as Irene, also hit the same week. You know, is Mother Nature saying, pay attention to somebody.
And listen to me, you know, and,
yeah.
and have respect, have some respect. I mean, it's it is true, I believe, that if the humans were wiped off the face of the earth, the Mother Earth would still remain and actually regenerate in a short amount of time. I think it probably could be at the longest, 10 years, that it would totally regenerate without the idiocy of humankind. And I love people, but I think that I just can't understand what has happened to common sense and just simple common sense in trying to restore the earth, which is our home, our mother. You know, it's really something else.
Mm-hmm.
The lack of even listening to science. I mean, that's something that George W. Bush was notorious for. But I would really think that President Obama would be listening to the scientists, that he's not to our knowledge. We don't really know what he's doing, to be honest.
No,
I mean,
we don't know, but he surely has an opportunity now to do something to, you know, to say that all those words he said weren't just words. And, you know, frankly, if he doesn't stand up to this, he's gonna lose a lot of support. This is going to undercut him. Maybe a lot of people, I don't know what people will do as far as voting is concerned, but it is going to have an impact upon what people. It certainly is going to dampen the enthusiasm of people who care so much for the environment and the earth if he does not take a stand. You know, they're certainly not going to campaign for him.
It's just disappointing because he hasn't taken a stand on anything, really. And he's just holding close to these Republicans and being the, what is it called, the compromiser. But why would you just keep compromising with things that are completely wrong? And they don't care for him, and he's not gaining any support from them by compromising. So I think it would be just tremendous if he would do the right thing by Mother Earth and to hell with everybody else, you know, not to hell with us and not to hell with the people who really care, but to hell with the corporations and to these people who just could care less about the environment.
Yeah. Well, he claimed to care about that, and when he campaigned, claimed to care about that. And this is the test to show the country and the whole world, you know, the whole world was standing up and hailing him as some great hero when he was elected. But this is an opportunity for him to show that he's serious about climate change. And
yes.
I don't know if he is. He hasn't shown us that he is. And he's going to alienate his base. He already has alienated his base by his lack of taking stands. And, you know, it's crazy to think of what could happen. I mean, it could get worse, but my goodness, people have got to have some courage.
Yes.
And I'm still learning. You know, I'm not claiming that, you know, that I'm any great hero. The heroes are the people like Tim DeChristopher that's spending 2 years in prison west for, you know, he bid on a piece of property so it wouldn't be exploited for its resources and wouldn't go into the oil companies. And he ended up getting arrested and put in jail. And he started an organization called Peaceful Uprising, and I love that name.
Yeah,
because it says there's an uprising, which means, you know, courage and conviction, but peaceful. Not passive, but peaceful. Peaceful doesn't mean passive.
Well, certainly an uprising is not passive. That's just beautiful. And he is a heroic person. I wish that there's something we could do for him.
Well, I think taking a stand is what he would like to see us do. I had the opportunity to be interviewed, video interviewed twice in D.C., once right before I was arrested, and then the next day by a man who works for Peaceful Uprising. He was there doing photography and video interviews for the TarSandsAction.org.
Yeah.
And I guess they may get posted on YouTube tonight. I'm kind of curious to see how I come across. But this organization is building too, and I'd encourage people to check that one out.
Mm-hmm.
Peaceful Uprising. Get involved with the Transition Town movement. I'm very much involved with that, and we're hoping to help people to imagine living life in their communities, using less energy, learning to change their lifestyle, and actually imagining that it's a better way to live. You know, it's not
mm-hmm.
living with less, it's actually a richer way with deeper relationships, living more locally, growing food and building the local food system, building our local transportation. And it's one of the best ways to help make the change. Build community where you are. That's one of the best ways.
I think so, I think people feel so alone
mm-hmm.
And alienated. This Peaceful Uprising isn't coming up. I wonder if I tried .com, I tried .org.
Well, that's the name of it. Tim DeChristopher is the it's his organization. It's called Peaceful Uprising. But
I guess
there.
I'll just Google it.
You'll
find
it.
Tim DeChristopher.
Right.
Right.
D-E capital C.
So you were telling me this morning that you have composed a flute piece.
I could do a song or two for you. One thing I could do is just play a spirit song, which means that I'll just pick up my flute and play whatever the spirit gives me to play in the moment.
Uh-huh, whatever you wish is great.
Okay, well, I'll do that right now. I'm going to put the phone down so I can use both hands to play this spirit song. And as I'm playing this, I'm thinking about the need for healing of the planet, and particularly for the waters. So it seems like there's so many of these things, hydraulic fracturing and the tar sands extraction and the BP oil spills and Fukushima and in Japan, the nuclear plants meltdown. You know, the waters are getting polluted and damaged, and so I'm going to play this as a blessing for the waters. Okay?
Oh, beautiful. Yes.
Okay.
beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
Beautiful.
Yeah, the Native American flute has really helped open me up in ways I haven't been before, just to the connecting with the spirituality and the traditions of the indigenous peoples who've shown us long ago another way of living. What we call civilized is destroying the planet, and you can actually live in a way that is much more in harmony with all of the other creatures, animals, plants, and water, wind, all of those things. So, a lot of us who think we're so smart, myself included, I have a lot to learn from people that we've marginalized. We've just marginalized so many people that have so much to teach us. And I think I was telling you how inspired I am by the 13 indigenous grandmothers, they're called.
Yes.
They're 13 women, elders in their tribes, indigenous peoples from around the world, North America, Central, South America, Africa, Asia. And they all heard this call that said to them, now's the time. And they found each other. They found each other and decided to form this group, 13 indigenous grandmothers. And the 13 comes from the fact that there are 13 moons in a year. You know, so it's around the lunar calendar. And their purpose is to bring healing to the planet, to Mother Earth, and into the waters, and to begin to lead out into a different way of understanding life and living one with all of life. Mm-hmm. So I did write a song called 13 Moons, and I can't really do the whole song for you because what I need to do it is a grandmother. If I have a spoken part for a grandmother, and I need a drum. It's a song that I'm looking forward to doing. I've done it once in public, and now I have first time I did it, I didn't have a grandmother, so I left that part out. Now I have someone the next time I do it who's going to do the grandmother part for me. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to sharing that song.
And you can play a little bit now?
I could sing a little bit for you. I can't play it.
Okay.
But I could sing just a little bit for you if you'd like.
Go ahead.
I don't know how we're doing. All right, here you go. This is 13 Moons. 13 Moons. 13 Moons. All shine as one. 13 moons, 13 moons bright as the sun. Oh, hoya, oh, hoya, hey, oh, hoya, oh, hoya, hey, oh, hoya, oh, hey, oh, hoya, hey, oh, hoya, oh, hoya, hey, oh, hoya, oh, hoya, hey, oh, hoya. Thirteen moons, 13 moons, look upon the earth. 13 moons, 13 moons, see its time or birth. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, hey, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, hey, oh, yeah, ah, hey, oh, yeah, hey, oh, yeah, ah, hey, oh, yeah, ah, hey, oh, oh, yeah, hey, oh.
Oh, that's beautiful. Very peaceful.
So it's a vision of the 13 indigenous grandmothers. my interpretation of it.
Don't you just love the cycles of the moon? Oh, they're just so perfect.
Yeah.
It's this, you know, we really just need to simplify our lives.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah. And stay at home more and just hang out and meditate and be. Instead of doing, we can be in a state of being.
Yeah, I like that. Being in the sacred moment, and all of the earth is sacred.
Yes.
Take the next right step, and then notice where you are and who's with you, and then take another right step.
I know, I'm just about to tell you something that means I have to leave my home to do it, but you know, the famous Vietnamese Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh is, he's in his 80s, well into his 80s, I believe, and he is going to be in New York City, and my friend Joel and I are going to go. I'm going to meet my friend Joel there, and Joel is one of my oldest friends, and he was my brother and my brother's wife's best man at their wedding almost 50 years ago. I always have admired this little monk, and his thing is mindfulness. He's totally into the environment, how everything is interconnected, and all of his books are very profound and simple, very simple. So this thing is right near Penn Station, so when I take a train in there, I can just get off and walk a few blocks to, I think it's called Manhattan Ballroom or something. And we're not going to be, he's very famous for doing walking meditations, but I don't think we'll be, and it says in the instructions that we will not be walking through the streets of Manhattan, because that really blocks traffic, but we will... probably the place is large enough that he'll do a lot of mindfulness instruction for us, and just being in the presence of him is like pretty much like being in the presence of, say, the Dalai Lama. I've always loved him, and I'm looking forward to his just very peaceful. If more people could experience inner peace and living in the present moment, I don't think we'd have these problems.
Yeah. And he has something he calls interbeing, doesn't he?
Yes.
The word
yes,
interbeing,
he does.
Yeah. Which reminds me of there's a Native American tradition called One Heart, which I think is very similar to that idea, live with one heart towards all creatures.
Yes.
You know, you're yeah, maybe if you try to do it with your mind, you can't do it, but to do it with your heart.
Oh, wow. Now, that's always true, you know. And the mind has really gotten us the rational, even the rational scientific mind has gotten Western thought into a lot of trouble. But the emphasis on the heart, And so many spiritual practices, all of them have the universal truth of spiritual wisdom, all say the same thing about compassion and kindness. It is shocking to confront cruelty and heartlessness, but it exists in the world. And we must understand that it does, and greed and so forth. But it's something that is destroying the planet, you know, and it hurts other people. And it causes war and famine and children dying. But I don't know if we can solve these problems. But I think the only thing we can do is change ourselves.
Yeah.
That's the only thing we can do. And
do I have time to say something, kind of a follow-up of one thing I talked about the last time you had me? I don't know how much time we have yet, but
we have about 6 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, I mentioned about Farmer Bruce Kennedy. He was
the farmer
who lives all the way up almost to New York State in Pennsylvania in the Marcellus Shale region where there's so much hydraulic fracking for natural gas going on. And he was seeing his farm. There were several spills on his farm, and his small town was just getting, trucks nonstop and people divided against each other with different opinions. And he constructed a sign in the middle of his town, and he just wrote on this sign, it said, "Dear God, please save our small town." And then he talked a little bit about the spills and about his grandchildren. And when I saw the photograph of that, that moved me so much, and I thought, gee, I'd like to talk to this man sometime. Well, some of the young people that I know went up to that area, and they actually met him and one of his neighbors and have been invited to come up for a weekend. This farmer, Bruce Kennedy, wants to have people come up to his farm for a weekend, and I've offered to lead an interfaith service of some kind as part of that, talking with young women who's organizing it. So I'm having the opportunity to make a connection there, something I talked about before.
I think that is really great.
You know.
And
so,
were there a lot of young people involved in do you think a lot of young people were involved in the overall environmental movement?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of young people. There are people of all ages. A lot of young people. But you know what I've been hearing from the young people that I know? How inspiring it is to see people, the baby boomers. A lot of them have been pretty cynical about the baby boomer generation. And,
really?
And they've been really inspired to see that. It's touched them. I'm inspired to see the young people myself.
You think the young people have been openly critical of us because we sort of handed them this world of that seems like it's out of control?
They've been critical of us because I think they think we're selfish. I mean, I can't really speak for them, but I have heard some things like that. But they're also waiting. I've heard people, younger people say, "We're waiting for some elders. Where are the elders who've been through things who will step forward and give us some guidance? Because we have a lot of passion for living differently." But a lot of them that have that passion maybe don't have a lot of resources.
Yes.
I mean, not that the resources are, ultimately the great resource is a resource of community and of spirit and of nature. Those are the great resources.
That's absolutely true.
But the generations need each other. We need to learn to respect one another and, call one another, evoke one another's gifts and callings and contributions and help one another in our weaknesses and our blind spots, which we all have.
Yes.
And don't you think every generation probably has its own unique contribution to make, but also has its own blind spots that they have to deal with? And I think that's true.
Oh, it's very true.
My generation. So.
It's very true, very true. Well, and my parents' generation, we used to always criticize them for being, there's such a huge generation gap. I don't think the generation gap is so great nowadays, but it basically is, I can see why they would think that we are kind of haven't really accomplished what we said we would accomplish back in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably more like it, yeah. Well, we have actually come to the end of this wonderful program, and I really appreciate your efforts in going to Washington and educating all of us about this Tarzan's crisis. And we need to get more people, and this program like this will help people become more aware, and we'll get the word out. That's all I can say.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Kate, for giving me the opportunity to share my story.
Yeah, you have a great night, because I'm sure now you can go outside and enjoy the evening.
Well, I've been outside talking on the telephone the whole time.
Great.
So I've enjoyed that part. I've enjoyed the whole thing. Yeah, it was all been enjoyed.
Me too. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Kate. Yep,
bye-bye. And I'm playing music for Mother and Child.